Washington.
Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza on this live broadcast from Washington. Here are some of the top stories making news across Sudan and South Sudan this Tuesday, August 15, 2023. Sudanese politicians are meeting in the Ethiopian capital Addis Ababa to discuss ways of silencing the guns in their country.
Most of these issues have links with the ongoing war in Sudan, and we want to ensure that we stop this war.
And a top Vatican diplomat is in Upper Nile State capital Malakal to meet with South Sudanese fleeing the conflict in Sudan.
Because of the presence of the people coming from Sudan due to the conflict, the bishop there thought it is good to invite the cardinal so that they pray together on the feast of Mary.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Signatories to the Sudan's political framework agreement are meeting in the Ethiopian capital Addis Ababa Tuesday to unite under one group and discuss how to end the ongoing conflict in Sudan. For VOA News, Michael Atit reports from Juba.
Leaders from Sudan are meeting in the Ethiopian capital Addis Ababa to unify the various political forces and chart a strategy for silencing the guns across Sudan. Speaking during the opening session of the meeting, Alhaji Idris, a member of the Sovereign Council, says the four-month conflict in part of Sudan has caused division among Sudanese politicians.
Most of these issues have links with the ongoing war in Sudan, and we want to ensure that we stop this war. Prior to further political processes in the country, we need to be united and to begin working to establish a wider civilian front to end the war.
Idris is also the interim chairman of the Sudan Revolutionary Front, or SRF, a group of nine armed groups that signed the Juba peace agreement with the Sudanese transitional government in October 2020. In December 2022, the SRF coalition signed a framework agreement which called for restoring a civilian-led government in Sudan. Speaking to Al-Hadas TV channel in Addis Ababa, a member of the Forces for Freedom and Change, or FFC coalition, Esmat Abdul-Majid, says the meeting comes after several other consultations with leaders from regional and international bodies who continue to call for a peaceful settlement of conflict in Sudan. Abdul-Majid says his group is willing to make compromises for the sake of peace and stability in Sudan.
We as the Forces for Freedom and Change and other signatories to the framework agreement have received much appreciation from all the countries that we have visited. They vowed to offer support to all civilian political parties to play a role in ending the ongoing war.
Muhammad Basha, who is still trapped in Khartoum, told VOA via a messaging application that he hopes the outcomes of Addis Ababa meeting will end the violence in Sudan. Basha says the leaders meeting in Addis Ababa should consider the suffering of the people, learn from their past mistakes, and work to restore stability in the country.
This war should be a lesson learned to all leaders so that we avoid the disaster that occurred in the country. This war has impacted severely on general lives.
Sudanese journalist and political analyst Hafiz Kabir says a stable political process can be achieved in Sudan once Sudanese politicians focus their discussions on post-conflict issues.
First part of the negotiation is about stopping the war and to agree on a pertinent ceasefire, followed by political discussions. So I think signatories to the framework agreement are preparing themselves for this stage.
The United Nations Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs in Sudan says more than 4 million people have been displaced inside and outside of the country following the outbreak of fighting between the Sudan Armed Forces and the paramilitary Rapid Support Forces on April 15th. Some audios in this story was provided by Marwan Ibrahim, an Ethiopian journalist stationed in Addis Ababa. Michael Atit for VOA News, Juba.
Still on Sudan, United Nations agencies are urging an end to what they call a disastrous, senseless war in Sudan and for perpetrators of war crimes there to be held accountable. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
4 months into the war in Sudan, UN officials say the lives of millions of people have been destroyed and their basic human rights violated. The UN Human Rights Office on Tuesday said it has good reason to believe the Sudan Armed Forces and the paramilitary Rapid Support Forces have committed serious violations of international humanitarian and human rights law. UN High Commissioner for Human Rights Volker Turk blames the rival general's quest for power for the deaths of thousands of people and the destruction of homes, schools, hospitals, and other essential services. His spokesperson, Elizabeth Throssell, says the human rights chief thinks the huge number of people forcibly displaced by the conflict, as well as acts of sexual violence, may amount to war crimes.
Volker Turk expressed grave concerns that the chaotic situation, mired in impunity, is ripe for exploitation by other opportunistic armed actors and militia groups, and the violence may escalate further as a result. Now, while it's difficult to establish an exact number of casualties due to the intensity of the fighting, tentative figures indicate that more than 4,000 people have so far been killed, including hundreds of civilians.
Since fighting erupted April 15th, the UN Refugee Agency reports more than 4.3 million people have been displaced, more than 3.2 million inside Sudan, and over 900,000 as refugees and asylum seekers in neighboring countries. UNHCR spokesperson William Spindler says protection and health teams in Chad, Central African Republic, Egypt, and South Sudan have described horrific ordeals faced by women and girls in Sudan.
Shocking incidents of sexual violence, including rape, sexual assault, sexual exploitation, and physical violence, have been reported by women and girls who have fled the conflict. These incidents are reportedly perpetrated by fighters, criminals, and smugglers against civilians in Khartoum and other areas, as well as those on the move.
In addition to lasting physical, sexual, reproductive, and mental health consequences, the UNHCR reports some survivors have arrived in neighboring countries pregnant because of rape. The UN Human Rights Office reports it has received credible reports of 32 incidents of sexual violence, including at least 28 cases of rape. It says men in RSF uniforms were connected to at least 19 of these incidents as perpetrators. The agency adds the actual number of cases is likely to be much higher. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Still on Sudan, in a rare televised speech Monday, General Abdel Fattah al-Burhan, the head of Sudan's military, accused the Rapid Support Forces, commanded by Hamdan Mohamed Dagalo, of committing war crimes. Amnesty International has accused both warring parties of committing war crimes. Joseph Sigley, director of research at the Africa Center for Strategic Studies, discusses these developments with VOA's senior analyst Mohammed Al-Ashanawi.
General Burhan's claims are consistent with reports we've been hearing since the conflict erupted, and in fact, which seem to have escalated in the past months. The Rapid Support Forces, the RSF, is consistently alleged to have targeted civilians. They're using civilians as a shield, which is a potential war crime. They have ethnically targeted communities in the western part of the country in Darfur. And General Dagalo, Hemeti, his claims that he is working to restore democracy have absolutely no credibility. In fact, he had very limited trust on the part of the general population prior to this conflict. And now with these systematic attacks on civilians, he has even less support than before. So there's just no way that he can be seen as somehow as a champion for democracy in Sudan.
Amnesty International has accused both warring parties of committing extensive war crimes, including deliberate killings of civilians and mass sexual assault. In its 56-page report, the group said almost all rape cases were blamed on the RSF and its allied Arab militias. Would that report support Al-Burhan's position?
Obviously, Burhan is not the best spokesperson, as he himself has repeatedly undercut the democratic transition in Sudan, and his intransigence is, you know, partly to blame for the descent into this lawlessness and conflict that we're seeing in Sudan. Moreover, Sudan Armed Forces, which General Burhan commands, have bombed civilian areas, but the sense is that that has been primarily aimed at trying to root out the RSF. It hasn't been a wanton targeting of civilians. Therefore, I think it is fair to say that most of these atrocities are being pinned on the RSF, and we shouldn't draw a false equivalence between the two sides, despite the fact that Sudan Armed Forces also have much to account for.
Is there a practical mechanism for accountability for these crimes?
Well, this is the problem of facing a collapsed state where there's lawlessness. And so I think the first and most important thing that can be done is to continue to signal to both sides that they will not be recognized, even if one side were to prevail. International community, the regional actors need to convey they are not going to be recognized as the sovereign head of state. And therefore, there's not a political end game for this where they come out on top. I think that's really important because reports suggest, especially among Hemeti, that he thinks that he can sustain, you know, this conflict and eventually, if he's able to prevail over the Sudan Armed Forces, that the international community will come around and recognize him. So I think he needs to be disabused of that impression and that calculation. I think that can be reinforced with sanctioning individuals and institutions involved in financing this conflict and in getting arms into the conflict. So that's both in Sudan and those who are enabling that from outside. I think it is going to require more engagement on the part of the United Nations, would be critical to enhancing accountability. And I think we need to turn to the ICC. This is exactly what the ICC was created for when prosecutions couldn't take place at the national level. And we should recall that International Criminal Court was active in Sudan during the genocide in Darfur, 20 years ago. And that put an enormous amount of political pressure on the then leader, Omar al-Bashir. And it limited his travel, it limited his credibility, and really painted him into a corner. And I think if that, if Hemeti and members of the RSF and potentially members of the Sudan Armed Forces are alleged, or if there's an arrest warrant put out for them on war crimes, I think it would further isolate them politically and force them to consider other exit strategies.
That's Joseph Sigley, Director of Research at the Africa Center for Strategic Studies. He was speaking with VOA's senior analyst Mohammed Al-Ashanawi. You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, Vatican's top diplomat is in South Sudan. Find out why after the break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what is the best advice you have ever gotten?
Got an advice from my mom. She encouraged me to work hard. That she told me, and a very successful woman is a very hardworking woman.
The great one I can remember is the one my father gave to me to study hard. Actually, he was on his, I can say, maybe a deathbed. He was so ill. He had a stroke and he was so helpless. He couldn't do anything for me. That was the last day I even saw him. It was like, my son, study hard.
Is from my father. He has always told me that I shouldn't be afraid to learn new things and to take up new challenges, because he said that you're only afraid to take up new challenges when you haven't tried it.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202-630-8011. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202-630-8011.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Vatican Secretary of State Cardinal Pietro Parolin flew to Malakal Tuesday to meet with South Sudanese returnees who fled the fighting in neighboring Sudan. President Salva Kiir met with Cardinal Parolin Monday and assured the Vatican's top diplomat that he is committed to implement the 2018 peace agreement and take the country for elections in 2024. For VOA News, Manyang David Mayar reports from Juba.
In a meeting late Monday, Vatican Secretary of State Parolin and President Kiir discussed the status of the implementation of the 2018 peace agreement. South Sudan's acting Foreign Affairs Minister Ding Dao Ding attended the meeting between President Kiir and Cardinal Parolin.
He also conveyed the greeting of the Holy Father Francis to President Salva Kiir and wishes the people of South Sudan and President Salva good health. On his side, His Excellency the President also briefed him. He conveyed his greeting to the Holy Father and briefed the visiting Holy See's Prime Minister about the general situation, including the implementation of the peace agreement. And President assured him that people of South Sudan will go for election next year, 2024. President Salva also briefed him about the situation in Sudan.
The United Nations mission in South Sudan, the Troika and the Joint Monitoring and Evaluation Commission, which monitors the implementation of South Sudan's peace agreement, say they are concerned about the slow progress in implementing the peace deal. Cardinal Parolin is in Apanale State, capital Malakal, Tuesday, on the second day of his visit to South Sudan. Father Samuel Abe, administrator at the Catholic Archdiocese of Juba, says the bishop of the Catholic Diocese of Malakal, Stephen Nyondo Ador, invited Pietro to celebrate the Feast of Holy Mary with the South Sudanese returnees and IDPs in Malakal.
Because of the presence of the people coming from Sudan, due to the conflict, the bishop there thought it is good to invite the cardinal so that they pray together on the Feast of Mary, the feast which is well known by the Catholics as Assumption of the Blessed Virgin Mary. So that is the reason why he is here in South Sudan. Maybe his presence just to build solidarity, and then perhaps after seeing he will be taking the voice of the IDPs so that the Vatican can intervene.
Abe says Cardinal Pietro will visit Lagos State capital Rumbek, where he is expected to hold a mass with Catholic faithful. Before visiting South Sudan, Cardinal Pietro was in Angola, where he presided over the episcopal ordination of Archbishop Germano Penemoto, who has been appointed as the apostolic nuncio in Pakistan. For VOA News, I'm Anyang Dev Mayer in Juba.
The United States issued a business advisory on South Sudan on Monday, warning about financial and legal risk to U.S. businesses with companies that have significant ties to the South Sudan government. The advisory says South Sudan's transitional government has done very little to implement key economic reforms and public financial management commitments in the 2018 Revitalized Peace Agreement. South Sudanese officials did not respond to requests for comment on this advisory. Goi Joel Yol is a South Sudanese political activist and business consultant. He tells my colleague James Batty he hopes the advisory will serve as a wake-up call to the South Sudan government.
You know, this is one of a kind, you know. South Sudan have been receiving aid, you know. Generally, people have been receiving aid, and the businesses were not flourishing because of the inflation. And that was the result of non-implementation of the peace agreement. Things continue to go down from that time on. My reaction is that this is a clear message to the leaders of South Sudan that it's not only security advisories that relate to people's security, it's also business advisories. You know, the economy is in peril. The economy is directly hitting the welfare of the people. And I think that that advisory will make them wake up and consider to implement the peace agreement and do economic reforms.
Exactly so, because now this is intertwined with the whole process of implementing the revitalized peace agreement. What would this mean for South Sudan accomplishing those things that need to be done immediately?
I think that's a very clear message. You know, if, you know, people are talking of the economical status of South Sudan. You know, there has been a lot of corruption. There have been non-disclosure of revenues. You just realize in the last few days there was this debate in Parliament of the budget being passed. And the budget was not reflective of the reality. You know, the budget is not reflective of the peace agreement and what should be done, including formation of election commission and other issues. This one sends a message back to South Sudan telling them, look, guys, you got to be serious. If you want elections, you have to do these things that related to economy, that related to transparency before going ahead. It's exactly telling South Sudan that you are not serious with whatever you are doing right now.
So let's look at it from the business point of view. Governments are always involved in business because they run the country. This will have an impact on ordinary business people.
Yeah, that's unfortunate. You know, what is happening now, most of the businesses are state-run, you know. If you look at NILPED, and this is supposed to trickle down to the people. But with the economy, you know, the inflation is so high, and people were even negotiating in the new budget to raise the salaries to 600% and that. Nothing is being reflected on the ordinary lives of even government workers. If government workers cannot be paid and the livelihoods are so expensive, it directly also hits on the small businesses. South Sudan is towards the collapse economically. And if government needs to get out of that, they have to reflect that transparently through their budgeting process. I think it broke the camel's back when the budgeting process was being formulated and all the things that were stipulated in the peace agreement were not considered. You know, you saw the walkout of other opposition parties because of that process. If they don't wake up, it's going to hit the common man. The country depends mostly on humanitarian aid right now, and nothing makes sense in a business way of things. Even the ordinary businessman cannot make ends meet.
That's Goi Joel Yol, a South Sudanese political activist and business consultant. He was speaking with my colleague, James Batty. The fighting in Ethiopia's Amhara region has now become the country's most serious security crisis since the two-year civil war in Tigray. Amhara is Ethiopia's second most populous region. Residents there accuse the federal government of trying to undermine their region. Dr. Edgar Gitua, an international relations, security and diplomatic expert at the U.S. International University in Nairobi, who has been closely monitoring the situation, talked to my colleague Yahya Suihub about the two sides involved in the fighting and what is at stake for Ethiopia and for Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed.
Ethiopia has traditionally a very complicated security architecture where you find quite a number of regions have their own, let's call them militia, who defend those regions. And so in the Amhara region, it's just one of those militias, the Fano militia, who are now feeling they do not want to come under government control. Prime Minister Abiy has decided to bring all these militias under one unified command, but those regions do not want to cede that control. It's a complex problem, but it is almost like if we look at Sudan, the RSF, before they were the Janjaweed before. So they are a force among themselves. When you now want to bring them into the mainstream army to streamline them, it creates a problem. So that's what's happening in the Amhara region in Ethiopia.
It's so similar in other African countries as well, like you mentioned Sudan. But this Fano thing you just mentioned, it's an informal militia with no publicly known command structure. And, you know, they're not nearly as well equipped or organized as the government. But could they be a serious threat to the government if the struggle gets widespread support?
Yeah, it's true. The biggest danger of such militia groups is not in their strength. It is not in their military might. It's not even in their command structure and their organization. The biggest threat such militia groups pose to the main unified government is the idea that a people can resist government. Once you plant that seed that we can rebel or fight government, you invite other regions in Ethiopia. The Tigrayans are going to rise up again. You know, all other small regions within Ethiopia are going to rise up again. And this, and collectively, they will be, create a problem that could disintegrate Ethiopia. So their strength right now, what Abiy is struggling and fighting against, is to show that his central government is in control. And it's very vital for him to win this fight. Because if he does not contain the Fano forces, he will invite aggression from many other quarters within the country. So it is very important for him to get them under control very quickly. Unfortunately, it's disintegrating. It's moving into, the situation is going, it's becoming more dire and more complicated. But the faster and sooner he's able to bring them into control and up. And for me, if I was Abiy, just giving him advice, I would have allowed them to remain the way they are without interfering with them. Have an informal agreement with them, with their final forces, to tell them, whenever I need you, you can come to, we can work together. But he gives them that semi-autonomy. So long as he tells them, so long as you're under, you're not opposing the government, I will leave you alone. Now that he is disturbing them, he is going, he has to deal with them. If he cannot deal with them, his problem will be not only the Fano forces, the Tigrayans are also going to come up. Other areas are going to start rebelling against him, and that could easily crash and bring down his government.
And lastly, Doctor, the new state of emergency in the Amhara region has now been approved by the parliament. This move, don't you think, will exacerbate the situation instead of actually controlling it?
Of course, yes, I agree with you. It is going to make the situation worse, definitely, because you are now radicalizing the people, emboldening the people. It is easy for those people to be very vulnerable to propaganda from their own leaders, that you see the central government under Prime Minister Abiy doesn't love us or are not interested in us. Of course, governments are the biggest enemies. Governments are constituted as criminal enterprises. It is governments that break the laws. It's governments that make and break laws. So what Prime Minister Abiy is trying to do is, in trying to cut, reduce communication between people, instill a bit of fear in them. It's not the best of tactics, but that is what he probably feels he has to do at this point, because he needs to stop that flow of information, flow of propaganda. So he really wants to clamp hard on them, and he's hoping that his superior military might is going to outlast them. It's going to make the people tired until they give in. Unfortunately, for some of these cultures and societies, it is going to embolden them. It's going to radicalize them. It's going to make them become hardliners. Even the ones who are pro-government might easily begin to become vulnerable to propaganda, that the government does not like us. The government wants to finish us. And so that for me, that was probably not the best of moves. But let's just hope that he's able to maneuver that quickly and come to a compromise with the leadership within Amhara so that they can resolve this as quickly as possible.
That was Edgar Gitua, an international relations, security and diplomatic expert at the U.S. International University in Nairobi. He spoke with my colleague Yehes Wihi from Nairobi this past hour. That's all we prepared for you this Tuesday, August 15, 2023. We now leave you with Eddie Kenzo and the song Blessed.
Get them up for my tongue and it's so Coco, you come my man, you come up, get them back. Is it moving and say no to it? I feel blessed, I feel blessed. Oh, yeah, I feel nice, I feel nice today.
Been listening to Eddie Kenzo and the song Blessed. Don't forget to visit voafrica.com for all your favorite programs and news updates. If you miss this program, go to www.voafrica.com/South Sudan. I'm your host, John Tanza, on this live broadcast from Studio 14 here in Washington. On behalf of our producer, Kwame Ofori, and engineer, Killer William, we wish you a blessed evening. Remember to join us tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.